This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
For this month's JodBite, I'm talking to Dr. Matthias Vidal. Hi, Matthias.
Hi.
To get things started off, could you maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be working at JBCA?
I'm from Chile. I came here to do my PhD with Dr. Clive Dickinson. Now I just finished last December my PhD, and now I'm a postdoc here.
Cool, great. So what did you work on during your PhD?
It's a mix between cosmology and interstellar medium. It's very related to the CMB science. It's called CMB foregrounds, and it's a study of the emission that is in the radio frequencies that we observe, the CMB, that is not the CMB, and it's mostly coming from our own galaxy. So my PhD was trying to understand and characterize particular synchrotron emission from our own galaxy in polarization, and also a relatively new type of emission that was discovered a few years ago that is called anomalous microwave emission. So I'm focusing those two things.
Are you continuing that work in your postdoc?
But now I'm also part of the Planck collaboration. Using sort of similar analysis that I used for my PhD, but now with Planck data.
Okay, cool. So what instruments, what telescopes were you using during your PhD? Were you using ground-based telescopes or space or a bit of both?
Yeah, a bit of both. I started as a member of the QUIET collaboration, which was a CMB polarization experiment that was located in Chile in the Atacama Desert, the same place where ALMA is.
All right.
Then that was one part of my PhD. Also worked with WMAP data, satellite that was observing the CMB, and also data from an interferometer in the US called KARMA. Okay. And that was used for anomalous microwave emission studies in some particular clouds in our galaxy. Yeah, it's a bit of mostly radio astronomy, but yeah, a bit of everything.
And so when you say you're looking at these other sources of CMB emission or of radio emission, what exactly is the goal? Are you trying to make a picture of these foregrounds, or is the goal then, I mean, what are you trying to do?
Yeah, I mean, for CMB people, for cosmologists, the foregrounds are just contamination that they want to remove. The data set that WMAP and Planck and the CMB experiments provide are most of the emission is coming from this galactic emission. Most of there is actually a small percentage that is CMB. So there is a lot of information about our own galaxy that we can learn from this using these data sets. I'm using polarization data, WMAP and now Planck, to study the magnetic field in our galaxy. And there are some structures in the galaxy, like sort of filamentary structures that are very big, one of the largest structures in the entire sky, which are visible in polarization at these frequencies. It's not really clear what these things are, and it's because now we have this data set that we can really measure observational properties and try to compare with models of the galaxy of magnetic field and particles, cosmic particles, like traveling in these field lines, which emit the radiation that we see.
So tell me a bit more about the magnetic field of our galaxy. I mean, is this something, do all galaxies have a magnetic field, or how is it structured?
On a fundamental level, it's not very clear how this magnetic field started from like the formation of the galaxy. But it is observed that most galaxies, like spiral galaxies around us on Milky Way, have a northern component of a magnetic field, which is most of the time parallel to the galactic plane. And also it has a turbulent component, which is because of the nature of the interstellar medium that is sort of fractal and turbulent. You have these two components. In that synchrotron emission, and in particular polarization, is very useful to study this because the polarization is sort of comes from regions where you only have an northern magnetic field, because the component that is turbulent will vanish after, like, the emission from a turbulent region will not be polarized. By using polarization, we can study the other component, which is like the large scale component of the magnetic field of the galaxy.
It sort of gives rise to this polarized emission, but does it affect the other components of the galaxy? Does it affect galaxy evolution or formation? Do we know anything about this, or
the magnetic field itself?
Yeah.
I'm sure it does, but the question is to which extent. I don't know. I'm not an expert in galaxy evolution, but I think that that's one of the one of the interrogants that have been there, because there must be at least important in star formation, or because the galactic fields in star forming region, and when you have massive stars, can be very big. So that must have an important contribution also in the galaxy. So it can get to really high values sometimes. So you have, like, what I'm studying in particular is the diffuse component, mm-hmm. which is relatively smooth and not very, very highly magnetized. But as soon as you go to, like, smaller regions in space, even in molecular clouds, you expect the magnetic field to be higher, just because the regions are more dense and mm-hmm. and the environmental field get compressed as well.
Okay, so the fields on really large scales are just kind of not that strong and kind of smooth. But then when you zoom into sort of denser areas, there's more fields.
But then it becomes turbulent, so it's like uh-huh. you can have a region where it's very, very high, but
it's difficult to study.
Yeah.
I think cosmic magnetism is one of the magnetism of the Milky Way, at least, is one of the science goals of the SKA as well. They're really interested in looking at that sort of stuff.
I think that will give us a lot of information, because the good thing about the SKA is that it's observing low frequencies and in a very, very broad spectrum. So you can use a technique that is called far rotation to observe the magnetic field along the line of sight, mm-hmm. not only the integrated component.
As far as your work goes, you're basically just sat in front of a computer most of the time when you're analyzing data. Do you get to go out to the telescopes that you've used or things like that?
Yeah, I mean, now I've been sitting on the computer for a long time. But I used to, when I started my PhD, I went to Chile to observe with a quiet experiment. That was very cool. I spent 3 weeks there. And the place is amazing. But since then, well, I'm using mostly space observatories.
That's a bit difficult to go on.
And other telescopes that now I have data. Normally you have an astronomer that observes the data for you. So it's not a bit like ALMA, that now most of the time you just, uh-huh. they will send you the data. It's a bit sad, because going to observe is always, I guess that anyone that wanted to study astronomy, like, start with the romantic idea of being, like, in the telescope at some moment.
For sure.
I think that with time that is going to become less and less frequent.
I think the telescopes are getting quite isolated as well, so it's difficult to go there on a daily basis. I mean, you went to the Atacama Desert. What was it like observing up there? I mean, you must feel far away from everything else, really.
Right? Yeah, I mean, it's quite extreme. I mean, the quiet experiment was as an experiment, and that means that it's not an observatory that is properly installed there, you know? It's like it only was observing for a few years, and then it stopped. So it's right. not, so the in terms of facilities and electricity, internet connection, everything is not optimal. One of the reasons we have to go, like, every day to the telescope itself is just to bring the data back. We burn the data in disks. Uh-huh. And you have to also, the electricity is provided by generators there.
Wow.
So be aware that the petrol truck comes, and so it's a bit more engineering with the telescope, but it's quite fun. I mean, it's like a good adventure. Now, I guess if you work in a proper observatory like ALMA or Opticals, BLT, it's nothing like that.
Well, we had an interview with Liz Guzman, who was from ALMA, actually, and she was describing how there's a huge infrastructure in place, basically, for all of those things. So they're not as isolated as it may seem.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, when I went to observe Quay, we were using the road that ALMA built to get to the site, just because it's more secure than the other one.
Sure.
And then you consider the size of that. I mean, these guys build that road. They have, like, fiber optical links.
Coming back to your current work, so you're sort of working in the Planck data, and, I mean, without getting you to spill your secrets, how does that, what's the way forward for foreground studies? I mean, is the goal to have a sort of complete picture of what's going on, and then that's it, you can move on to something else, or?
Yeah, in terms of CMB foregrounds, the answer is something like that the idea is to really quantify what is CMB and what is not CMB, and that is a difficult problem, just because there are many components that produce radiation at those frequencies.
Okay.
It's not a simple task to do. At least the residuals that you have from your subtraction method are smaller, or you understand them really well, then you can say, okay, this is foreground, that is CMB, and I check the CMB and I do my science. So, and that's fine. But for the galactic science, there is a lot of data there that has to be interpreted. The CMB, in a way, the signal is relatively simple. It's, mm-hmm. it's a Gaussian field, and I'm understanding it. And, but the foregrounds, like the galactic emission, is very complex, and it has much more information than the CMB. So there is a lot of science that can be done.
Can come out of that.
It's a cool data set. And the great thing is that it's going to be available like very soon for the community. So
there should be a lot more insights on our galaxy from
definitely
actually as a sort of almost an unintended offshoot of the CMB project. Okay, cool. Well, thanks a lot, Matthias. Thanks for talking to us today, and good luck with your research.
Thanks.